The game is over. Your Bucks postgame show starts now. Welcome to Bucks Talk. Insight, analysis, and your chance to sound off on the game you just heard. Now to break it all down, here's your host, Justin Garcia.
All right, it is starting to look better and better. As we said, you can clearly see more and more chemistry developing. It was a slow start for the Bucks tonight in Charlotte, but what really struck me most is how they played over the course of the final three quarters of this game. You gave up 37 points to the Hornets in the opening quarter, and you ended up holding them under 100 points for the game. So, you know, again, this is not a 10-game issue or a 10-game fix. It's going to take more than that. It may take more than 20 or 30 games to really feel like this team has kind of ironed out everything and they've developed that chemistry and they're headed in the right spot. I think they are headed in the right spot already. But the finished product is going to take some time for us to really get a glimpse at. But not only the 8 games they've played since those first four, which were very, very rough, with the exception of that win against the Philadelphia 76ers. In the 8 games played since then, they have looked like a much, much different team. And especially in these last 3 games that we've seen, this group has looked much, much better. A very, very encouraging stretch of basketball here that we've seen from this Bucks team. 855-616-1620 is the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. That's the old National Bank Talk and text line. You can text in your takeaways from this, or we'll take your phone calls as well. But look, we mentioned this prior to the in-season tournament starting. Point differential was going to be big. And the way they had set it up with just 4 games that you play, when you look at things and say, well, wait a minute, what are you going to do for ties? Head-to-head will solve the tiebreaker. Well, it's 4 games. You're going to have a lot of more than one-way ties, you would assume. You're going to have a lot of teams probably finishing 3-1. We talked about it a little bit. We'll get into it a little more on this show on the postgame. It's a very good scenario, very good chance where that's the scenario we see in Group B. You could see the Bucks, the Heat, the Knicks all finish 3-1. So in that case, obviously, head-to-head isn't going to solve it. Point differential is. And I mentioned being on a call with the league where they talked about the reasoning behind point differential being the number 2 tiebreaker was to add some more intrigue into this tournament and to kind of add another level of increasing the level of competition. In other words, look, it's going to benefit you to keep your foot on the gas and win by a blowout. And also, it's going to benefit you on the other end to not just roll over and empty the bench, to try and fight and erase some of that deficit. We heard Adrian Griffin after the game tonight say, I had Chris Middleton out there. Despite the fact that the game was basically over, I kept the guys out there as long as I felt like I could or should because of point differential and how important that is. And the Bucks are in a very, very good spot now. When you look at what they have left, and specifically the other team that's also unbeaten in their group, what the Miami Heat have left, the Bucks should be in a great spot going into that last game, November 28th in Miami, to wrap up their group play games. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk, a night where Damian Lillard took over 1 quarter early. He dominated in the 3rd quarter, and this defense, again, we touched on what they have done in terms of their ratings since the last time they played the Toronto Raptors, how the defensive rating had climbed, how their net rating had climbed. We'll give you the updated numbers as well, because this is another one of those, again, get-right games where you're able to boost some of those ratings on both ends of the floor this time. We'll take a look at where the Bucks currently rank with their offense, defense, and net rating, and get to your thoughts after this on Bucks Talk. 31-point win in Charlotte as the Bucks improved to 2-0 in the in-season tournament group play, and they're 8-4 on the season. So what a difference 6 days makes. I mean, you think about how they looked. Look, what a difference 2 weeks makes. It was 2 weeks ago today. The Bucks went back to utilizing Brook Lopez in a drop defense, and we got the numbers to back it up. Again, very, very small sample size of just 8 games we're referring to. But this Bucks defense has looked much improved since that was the case. So we'll update you on those numbers in just a moment. And again, speaking of Brook Lopez, 6 block shots tonight. Only the 5th player in NBA history to have 6 or more shots, 6 or more block shots in consecutive games at the age of 35 or older. And Brook just continues to dominate in terms of his rim protection. 33 blocks now in those 8 games played since when they put him back in the drop. He has blocked 33 shots in those games. Just 2 block shots the first 4 games of the season. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head to the phones and talk with Dick in Port Washington. How's it going tonight, Dick?
Good. My prediction of 20 games in, we're going to see what the true team is. But I know you're not going to like this, but I just got some things about this bogus tournament. You know, first of all, the courts. I thought I'd seen all the ugly courts. Now I'm watching Phoenix at Utah. This is an ugly court. But have you seen one court that looks great, that looks like, man, we should have this all year long?
Okay, so... great. I mean, I don't have a huge problem with them. I like that the courts are different to really differentiate it, but I have on the Bulls coming back against the Magic in the background now. The red courts that we've seen, the Bulls have done it a couple of teams. No, that's a hard no.
Okay. I mean, this purple court in Utah.
Yeah, there's that. There's the Timberwolves court, too. Have you seen that one?
Which one?
The Timberwolves.
Yeah, that's bad.
And the Pelicans.
That's a bad one.
Yeah, and the Pelicans is like a deep purple.
Yeah, I mean, if we have to have different courts to promote something, something's wrong with the sport. And the second part of this, and I've got other ones, how the teams are selected or whatever, but this differential point is going to be a tiebreaker, okay? Mm-hmm. I do not understand that. So, at the end of the year, when the real tournament starts, is that going to be the first criterion? If there's a tie between two teams, is point differential for the year?
No. But let me ask you this.
What's the first tiebreaker? At the end of the year?
The first tiebreaker is head-to-head.
Yeah, okay. So we're drumming up all these false,
Hang on. Head to head is still the number one tiebreaker in the in-season tournament. But my question to you is, well, what would you like them to do? Because you're playing 4 games, so you're not going to be able to determine most of these with just head to head.
Okay, what I would have preferred, and my buddy Mike Wilbon, and he's my buddy because he agrees with me that he thinks this is bogus too. If you're going to have a tourney. This 2 weeks in between, we played Miami once already, but that game doesn't count in this tournament, but the next one does, and that happens to be in Miami. I mean, have a tournament. CYO League have tournaments that are real tournaments. What? You can't call this even a tournament.
Well, it is a tournament at the end, but you have to get the teams. Yeah. And look, the problem is this. I'll let you finish, but the problem is this. You still are doing this around an 82-game schedule. So this was the easiest way to say, okay, here's how we can figure out that these games count in the standings, so the regular season games, but they also count in the tournament, and then teams that don't advance will just have them play each other to make up, because there's 2 games that aren't on your schedule right now. That's going to be if you don't qualify or if you lose in the semifinals.
But that's me. That just makes my argument stronger. We had to work around the real season to get these bogus games in for this false tournament. I mean, if you're, you know, take 3 weeks in the, I get the point, and Wilbon does too. The league suffers in November. I got no problems with that. I want the NBA to succeed tremendously because it's my sport. But this is, I've talked to people that are borderline fans, and I tried to explain this to them. I leave with a red face because I can't justify it.
I mean, do you think, what about when we get to the actual tournament? Do you see your stance changing then?
No, because what led up to where the teams are seated, or however, I don't know if they even have a seating. I mean, I don't know how this works.
Well, okay, so
when you start playing against each other, if you have a true tournament, yeah, then it would make sense. Now you don't. I mean, so now Washington's going to come in. What do they care? They're out of it. You know, Damian Lillard tonight, I thought, made some great points about why the Bucks are kind of fired up for it. Because he stated, you know, Giannis, Brooke, the guys, Chris, they don't need the money. But they want to play for the guys that are hanging on. And that's great. I understand that. I don't have any problem with a November true tournament. The way the NBA is doing this with this circus show of courts and games, I mean, tournament games that are 2 weeks apart, that you play one team, it doesn't count, then you play them again, it does count. That's not what a tournament is. I don't know. I don't even know what you would call this.
All right. I don't have as much of a problem with it as you do, but my big takeaway from tonight, as we pivot towards what we've seen the last eight games, is, look, it's, you said 20 games. I said I think it's probably going to be like 25, 30 games, maybe even more before it feels like this team kind of turns the corner, but they're at least starting to get there. And I know it's not whole lot to pull from, but it's starting to look like what we expected.
No, it is looking so much better. The defense, the offense, we're still making passes to no one. We're still trying to pass through people's legs. That'll come. But, yeah, I've got no problems with the Bucks. I'm real pleased with where we're going here. There's room to grow yet. But we're going to be a deadly team come when it really counts. And to
me, this tournament
is just a distraction, you know. Well, let's just agree to disagree.
All right. We'll agree to disagree on what we saw or our stance on the in-season tournament. Dick, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
So, look, I get his point, and I've heard a lot of other people, like, it's not actually a tournament. And it's a much smaller scale tournament because you'll have quarterfinals and semifinals. The issue with it is you can't just do, like, an NCAA tournament style.
They're already complaining about back-to-backs as it is.
Well, no, but they wouldn't do back-to-backs in a tournament format, but you can't just do a true tournament where you say, okay, 30 teams. Because number one, you need the even number of teams, so that's why we have four on each side. But even if you said, okay, you got to do some type of seeding to get there. And then the big thing is what we were talking about before, is these are still regular season games. So you can't just say, okay, if you win the tournament, you will have won four or five games in single elimination play, because what happens to the teams that lose? Like, you're not going to have this team played 83 games and this team only played 77 games.
The only way that they'd be able to do that is if they based it off of last year's regular season standings and then did it like a high school holiday tournament where you move forward and you move backwards. But talk about a travel and logistical nightmare if you have to deal with that. You have to centralize it in one or two spots.
I think there are two potential changes we could see. Or not even changes, but like updates to this. Because there's going to be changes. We saw the same thing with the play-in tournament. When it was, you were only playing for the eighth seed and you had to be, what, I think within three games or something of whoever the eighth seed was and have a winning record, I believe. So that first year, we only saw one in the Western Conference. It was just the Blazers and the Grizzlies. And now it's become what it is now, where it's for the seventh seed and for the eighth seed, and you could be as low as 10th and get into the playoffs. I think the confusion is also, wait, who are the teams that are in my group? Like I've mentioned it a handful of times of, well, the Bucks have the Knicks, the Heat, the Hornets, obviously, who they played tonight, and the Washington Wizards. So there's confusion there over who are the teams in my group and why are they in my group. I think it would go a long way if these courts, which I don't have a problem with, I don't think they're all great, but it's a marketing gimmick, but like you need something to call attention to. Hey, this is totally different. This is part of the in-season tournament. Like put the names of the teams in your group or something on the floor just to stand out of here's that. Or I wonder if we see next year they just go to, because again, it's five teams in a group. If you just go to your groups or your divisions, and it's the teams in your division that would add a little more juice to divisional rivalries and make the division somewhat important as well. So I do wonder if that's a potential change. But the other thing is, we've seen Adam Silver continue to tweak things and look at ways to improve. You can't make it as simple as if you win the in-season tournament, you get an automatic bid into the playoffs. You can't do things like that because then you're taking one step forward and one step backward in relation to we want to add significance to the regular season and we want to drum up the interest there. But, you know, and I forget where I heard this, but I heard somebody else mention, it might have been Nate Duncan, of, well, what if you just, because the championship game does not count in the standings. So the two teams that play in the championship game will play 83 games in a season. So the statistics and everything from that game does not count. The only thing that counts is the money that you're going to get if your team wins. I heard it kicked around, well, what if you win, it does count. So in other words, you would have 83 games, you would have an extra win, so you would basically hold the tiebreaker if you finish tied. Let's say the Bucks and the Celtics finish tied with the best record. That 83rd game, Bucks win the in-season tournament, they would have one more win and be up half a game on the Celtics. So you would be able to basically break most tiebreakers. I wonder if that's something that we see going forward.
What about the runner-up?
No impact. Like the loss doesn't count. You were basically... there's no negatives from it. You can only gain by winning it.
I can see that. That's a huge advantage.
855-616-1620, the number to join us on the show tonight. Bucks now 2-0 in the in-season tournament. They are in a very, very good spot for the reasons we went over at the top of the show. We'll get to that once more. Also, I'm very curious because I was very much indifferent on this. When it was announced, you're trying to wrap your brain around, how does this work again? And what is, why are these teams in the Bucks group and why? And a lot of the questions Dick had. Wait a minute. So this game against the Wizards counts. So next week, for example, the Bucks play the Wizards on Monday and the Bucks play the Wizards on Friday. Only one of those games counts in the in-season tournament. So I was very indifferent and thought,
you got to think about it like soccer when you're playing in different competitions.
Right. And that's what this is based off of. In international soccer. But I was indifferent and thought, I still don't really understand it, but we'll see how it goes. It's been 2 weeks. I'm fully on board with it now. Now, if the Bucks were 0-2, maybe not so much. But now I've fully embraced it. But I am curious how much of the audience is aligned with Dick in that I don't get it. I don't like it. This is stupid. Just get this over with and let's just talk about regular season games. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We'll get into that. And also, where the Bucks currently rate in their games played. Again, it's only eight, but how they look in the rankings, or ratings, I should say, since November 3rd, 2 weeks ago today, when the defense reverted to drop defense and Brooke Lopez started to dominate, the numbers are extremely encouraging. We'll share those with you after this on Bucks Talk. 130-99, the final score in Charlotte. The Bucks take down the Hornets and start group play of the in-season tournament 2-0. So they lead Group B. They're 2-0. The Miami Heat are 2-0 as well. But the Bucks now have a plus 36 point differential, and the Miami Heat are plus 13. The Knicks are 1-1. Bucks, of course, beat the Knicks in their first in-season tournament game or group play game, I should say. And they won that game by 5. Knicks won tonight by 21 against the Wizards. So the Knicks have a plus 16 point differential. The point of it all is the Bucks are plus 20 over any team, at least plus 20 over any team in their group. So your next in-season tournament game is 1 week from tonight when the Washington Wizards come to town. Now, the Wizards are out of it. They're 0-3. They've looked brutal. And not only that, their point differential is, I believe it's minus 35. It is the worst in the Eastern Conference. And I believe it's the second worst in all the NBA behind only the San Antonio Spurs, I want to say.
Minus 52 for San Antonio.
Yikes. So the Wizards are very bad, and you should win that game. Not only should you win the game, you should win it comfortably. And if that's the case, you're going to be 3-0. Your point differential would be at least plus 37. And again, you should be at that point, barring a total blowout, plus at least 10 on either Miami or New York, whoever it is. And that's the interesting part. You got the Wizards left. You should win that game. If you do, you're 3-0. Then you got the big one with Miami to wrap things up. The Miami Heat, who started 2-0, they started 2-0 with that plus 13 point differential, beating the Hornets and the Wizards. So they have the two best teams, other than themselves, left in their group. They play the Knicks, I think, next Friday. And then they play the Bucks the following Tuesday. So if the Knicks win that game against Miami, you're in really prime spot. Because then you beat Miami. Let's assume you beat Washington. But if the Knicks win, if you beat Miami, you're clearly winning your group. And then it comes down to, are the Bucks the one seed in this tournament? If you lose to Miami, it would then at least be a three-way tie between you, the Knicks, and the Miami Heat, and that's where point differential is going to loom large, where the Bucks have such a large gap. So the point of it all is, it may be confusing, but the Bucks are in a really good spot, and I think as this started, we were all fretting over, man, this team doesn't look right. There's something here. Is this going to work? And all the ridiculous nonsense that we heard about, is this the right coach? And all of that chatter. Well, now here we sit of, are the Bucks really going to go deep in this tournament now? Are we going to start to see some of those matchups that we hoped we would see in this in-season tournament when you think about potentially setting up things like, let's say the 76ers, the Celtics, and the Bucks win their groups, and then your wild card, I don't know, maybe it's Miami, maybe it's Indiana, that you're getting these matchups that, like, oh, man, this could be a preview of the playoffs, only this is single elimination, winner takes all in both conferences. So to me, that is why I went from relatively indifferent to just fully on board with what we've seen in this in-season tournament. We'll get to that in just a second, or get a little more into that and what the current standings look like, not just in the Bucks group, but everywhere. So if this ended today, here's what you would get. But we would be remiss if we didn't point out another game where Brook Lopez was an absolute monster. 6 block shots tonight. Mentioned it a couple of times. Only the 5th player in the history of this league, 77 years, I think, that has had consecutive games of 6 or more blocks at the age of 35 or older. And the last player to do so was Dikembe Mutombo in 2004. He has blocked 33 shots, I believe, since the Knicks game when they went back to a drop defense and kept him closer to the rim. So you do the math. It's more than 4 block shots a game that he's averaged over that stretch. He had 2 block shots total through the first 4 games of the season. So Brook has looked a lot better. I said at the top of the show, the Charlotte Hornets scored 37 points in the first quarter tonight. And I think a lot of people jumped to that. Well, here we go. We said this could be a track meet. They're going to push the pace. We've seen a lot of guards start to eat up the Bucks defense. Maybe that's going to be LaMelo Ball tonight. And it was, statistically. 37 points that LaMelo Ball scored in this game. But you gave up 37 in that opening quarter, and the Hornets couldn't even get to 100 points total. So the defense got better as the game progressed. And the other thing is, I don't think that quarter was bad, per se. The 37 wasn't great, but I don't think the Bucks made a lot of mistakes and looked bad defensively. Some of it was just plain luck and where the ball bounced and some of the shots that the Hornets hit. We saw that revert to the mean for the final three quarters of this game. I thought the defense has continued to look better. I'm not saying it's great, but it's looked better, and they've been much more connected. And prior to this game tonight, when we talk about small sample sizes, and we pointed out that first game or that game against the Knicks and what this defense had looked like since. In the seven games, again, prior to tonight, in the seven games that the Bucks played, starting with that Knicks game November 3rd all the way until that Raptors game on Wednesday, if we're just looking at those seven, the Bucks' offensive rating was a 116.7. That's 10th best in the league. Their defensive rating was a 114. That's 14th. And again, we talked about this a lot after the Raptors game. You can live with that. Their net rating was 2.7, which is 10th. So now, a 31-point win will help. But again, it's one of those, as we mentioned, get-right games. Now in the eight games that the Bucks have played since then, and the thing that jumps out to you is a lot of this matches what we've seen. The Bucks have the eighth best offense by way of offensive rating, clocking it at a 117.9. I think that number is only going to continue to climb, and we haven't even talked about some of the minor adjustments we've seen with Damian Lillard. We'll get to that in a second, but I think that number is going to continue to climb, obviously. And we'll say it again, they have not played. You've had matchups against good offensive teams. The Indiana Pacers are currently number one in offense during that stretch. You played the 76ers, but we're excluding that. That was your first game of the season. Philly right now is the sixth best offense. But that's it in terms of, and the Knicks, by the way, who somehow have the third best offense during that stretch. So two of the top three offenses in the league you played in this eight-game stretch we're talking about. Eighth best offense, eighth best defense at 111.7, and eighth best net rating at 6.2. That 6.2 number is getting closer to what you expect from this team. You know, it's basically flat for the year, although tonight is going to go a long way in bumping that up. It was flat, I should say, after that Raptors game. Tonight is going to boost that. But either way, you would expect this team to be somewhere around 7 or 8 in a net rating. The defense is going to take a step backward because you lose Drew Holiday. But you figure the offense is going to take a step forward. So 8-game sample size, the number 8. 8-game sample size, 8th best offense, 8th best defense, 8th best net rating. It's starting to match the eyeball test that we're seeing with this Bucks team. And for the season as a whole, Boston Celtics have the best net rating in the league, 12.7. The Denver Nuggets are second best at 9. The Philadelphia 76ers are just under 8. Then you have the Knicks, the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Thunder. But all of a sudden, the Bucks currently have the 10th best offensive, the 10th best net rating in the league for the season as a whole. Not just that 8-game sample, so including the brutal loss to the Raptors, including an equally brutal loss to the Atlanta Hawks, and as rough as they looked the first 4 games of the season, they all of a sudden have the number 10 net rating in the league. Defense is, you know, for the year as a whole, it's up to 21. So that is starting to make some strides, where it was the first 2 games, man, the Bucks defense is looking like historically the worst defense in the league. 21 is not great. But 21 is much better than 30 and historically bad. And the offense is number 7 in the league. So right in line with what we've seen over this 8-game stretch. All of these numbers, and I know I just bombarded you with numbers in an audio format, But it's all encouraging for where this group is headed. And again, it all just continues to drive home the message of patience. I know when we talk about patience, we all want it right now. But we said from the start, it is going to take time. So to jump to any broad conclusions, maybe you'll say, hey, well, you just did it with an 8-game sample. A little bit, yeah. But 4 games in, to jump to a conclusion and say, this ain't working, we hired the wrong guy, we shouldn't have done this, ridiculous. And I think these numbers are starting to back that up. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We'll take a look at the rest of the standings. If the league, or if the in-season tournament, I should say, ended today, what would we get for our matchups? We'll take a look at that after this on Bucks Talk. All right, I put a poll question out there, a very exact science of a Twitter X poll, but I put one out there as we started the show just to see, after we heard some very strong comments from Dick, do you like the in-season tournament, yes or no? And now, as a few people have suggested, should have been a third option of meh or indifferent, yeah. But yes or no, do you like this? What would you guess the split is so far, Matt? Very exact science.
Very exact science. I'd say 70% do not, 30 do.
Wow. You would be extremely wrong. So far, 90% of people have said, yes, I like it.
And I applaud that. I'm on the same page as them.
And some of the comments that we have, love it, watching other games I wouldn't normally watch. I think the important question is, do the players like it? And it seems like they do. These games have seemed more competitive, and the top teams are definitely not laying off the gas. I'm sitting here watching a Bulls game I otherwise wouldn't have watched because of the finish. So overwhelmingly, people are enjoying what they're seeing thus far in the in-season tournament. And again, it's only going to increase. You know, like if you're enjoying the group play this much, and especially once you get to the end of the group play, if you like it now, it's only going to get better, because once you get to that final day of this group play stage, when there's going to be so much that could be decided, those games are going to be all the more interesting, because again, it's just 4 games. And I think that's what adds to all of this, is there is very little margin for error. And the fact that it came this early in the season too, You couldn't help but think early in the season, man, as the Bucks are still kind of figuring things out, is this going to be where we look up and say, the Bucks not only did not advance out of group play, like they were one of the worst teams in their group because of the whole chemistry thing that they were still sorting out. But that last day, you're going to figure to have a handful of teams that are competing for the wild card, where, again, point differential is going to come down to it. Then it's going to be interesting to see, like, hey, coaches crunching the numbers. We have assistant coaches do the scout for teams. They're going to be doing the scout for the standings of, like, well, we're plus 17 right now, and we're tied with 3 other teams, and they're plus 20, and this team is, you know, plus 11. So we should try to win by X amount of points. And with 4 games, how, again, it's going to keep a lot more teams alive. The Pistons are not. They're 0-3. They're out. The Wizards are 0-3 in the Bucks group. They are out as well. The Memphis Grizzlies, you talk about season from hell. They're 0-3. They are eliminated. And the San Antonio Spurs, minus 52 point differential. They're 0-3. They are eliminated. The other teams, the Clippers play tonight. They're 0-2. They lose tonight. They're definitely eliminated. They play the Houston Rockets. What a story Houston's been. But if they win, they're 1-2. The Rockets are 1-1. Not great chances, but you would theoretically be alive for that wild card. So if the in-season tournament ended today, the Indiana Pacers would be representing Group A, the Bucks would be representing Group B, the Celtics would be representing Group C, and your wild card team would be the Miami Heat. The Bucks would be the 1 seed because they have the highest point differential, so you would get a knockout round game of the Bucks versus the Heat and the Pacers versus the Celtics.
This also creates marquee games that wouldn't otherwise have happened.
And look, that's going to be the big part is, I think, especially the last games of the season. You got the Bucks in the Heat and what that could draw. And then once you get to the knockout round, it's like it's one thing to have a Pacers versus Celtics series. Wouldn't that be fun to watch Tyrese Halliburton and that offense go up against the Celtics defense? Sure, but like this is one game, winner take all, which everybody, oh, it'd be great if you could rework things so it's the NCAA tournament. Well, this is what you're getting at a smaller scale. So if you like it now, you are going to love it as it advances to the final probably game of group stage. And then once you get into the knockout round, those would be your matchups. Bucks versus Heat, with the winner advancing to take on the winner of Celtics versus Pacers. So you'd be set up to potentially get Bucks versus Celtics to see who represents the Eastern Conference in this in-season tournament for the NBA Cup. And in the West, you would have the Sacramento Kings representing Group C, the Denver Nuggets representing Group B, the Lakers would represent Group A, and your wild card team would be the Utah Jazz. So just all across the board in the Western Conference. We'll take a look at some of those other scores and, again, continue to point out what an absolute monster Brooke Lopez has been at the age of 35, looking every bit the player that he was defensively a year ago. We'll talk about that after this on Bucks Talk. All right, so one quick correction here. The Denver Nuggets lost to the New Orleans Pelicans in a back-and-forth game. So let's redraw the brackets here. You would have the Lakers as your one seed. The Sacramento Kings would be the two seed. The Houston Rockets, who are playing right now, would be the three seed. And your wild card would be the Utah Jazz. You'd have Lakers versus Jazz and the Houston Rockets versus the Sacramento Kings as your other Western Conference matchup. Now, if the Rockets lose this game to the Clippers, it takes the Clippers off of life support in their group, number one, but it would propel those New Orleans Pelicans into the top spot in Group B. We did not see Marjon Beauchamp tonight, but look, We've spent a lot of time on this show talking about the progress that we've seen from, number one, Marjon, and the overall play that we've seen from Andre Jackson Jr. We saw it again tonight. He is, and I don't think this is hyperbole, he is already the best perimeter defender that the Bucks have on their team. So with no Jay Crowder and you're not going to say silver lining, or is it a good thing for this? Because a player got injured. Like, when a player's health is in question here, there is no, hey, here's the positive, or here's the silver lining, or this is an opportunity. Injuries are not opportunities. So it's very unfortunate for Jay Crowder. But you have to make the best of it. And doing that is continuing to develop Marjon and starting to see that development from Andre Jackson Jr. And look, the trajectory that we have seen Ajax on and what we've seen from Marjon the last year plus, you've seen a couple of other national voices say, hey, he's taken a little bit of a leap here this season. I know it's been, what, roughly 10 games that we've seen, but he's starting to show you something. And defense was the big question for this team. Not for that duo. If you can start to get it from those guys, and Adrian Griffin, who again was very, very unfairly, the discourse was beyond unfair and it was ridiculous. I'm not going to bring it up because of how stupid it was, but if you're active on social media, you couldn't miss it a couple of days ago. It was idiotic. And I think we've seen Adrian Griffin grow as a head coach. We talked about listening to his players. And I mentioned 2 weeks ago today when they made the switch to go back to drop defense and saying, look, this is big for a coach to do because he waited for a decade, essentially, to get a head coaching job. He went through the interview process 14 times, did not get the job. He finally gets it. And 4 games in, he says, okay, everything I wanted to do, we're going to scrap a lot of it. And the guys that I have want to do this, I'll just do that. There are not a lot of coaches that would have done that. Not just for being a hard-headed coach or it's my way or the highway, but it's just the side effects of it. When you worked to get to that level, and now basically immediately upon getting it, you're not allowed to do what you want. It could be tough to get that back. You know, it could be a lot of coaches would view it as, look, this is how I want to do things. This is how I prepare. This is the system I run. This is what I'm comfortable with. If I relinquish this, you know, if I'm already bending on this 4 games in, a weekend of the season, what else am I going to bend on? Am I going to be doing things true to myself? And for Adrian Griffin, he could have grappled with that. He didn't. And he said, look, all right, these are the things I want to do. Maybe it doesn't make sense right now with the makeup of this roster. This is what my group wants to do. I want them to have a voice. Let's do it. I'll bend a little bit on this. He made the same comment tonight when he was asked about Damian Lillard. And, you know, we've seen Damian Lillard play the entire first quarter quite a bit here. What was that change or what was behind that change? And saying, look, yeah, it's something that Dame approached me on too and said, you know, I did this quite a bit in Portland. I'm used to it. That's the way that I played. I think it might help get me going. Oh, by the way, it appears to have done that given his performance against the Raptors and now what he did once again tonight. That Dame approached me on it and said, this could help get me going. So, sure. He's been super positive. He's taken accountability. He's going to get it going. And he thought this would be something that would help him find a rhythm. As a coach, you listen. And if it makes sense, we'll implement it. So there's a give and take. And this is not to say previously you didn't get that under the previous staff and under Mike Budenholzer. Because we did see a lot of that from Bud the last couple of years especially. It was a very unfair label that was placed on him, too, of the, well, Bud only does things this one way. That wasn't the case the last 2+ years that he was in Milwaukee. But for Adrian Griffin to do this early in his career, I'm sure a lot of it is coming up as an assistant. And not only that, coming through the league as a role player and witnessing some of those conversations and seeing, look, maybe some of these things that I pushed for or fought for, I didn't get because I wasn't a superstar. And this is how it made me feel. And this is how it made me feel valued and learning from that. And same as an assistant coach to potentially, maybe he went through that on a number of staffs where he had players coming to him. He witnessed some of those conversations and saw, man, they didn't get their way. And you know what? I think that would have worked. So I think all of it is a learning experience, and as we talk about this team growing and developing chemistry and getting better, the same applies to Adrian Griffin. But I think he is only going to get better, and I think we've seen him willing to do things differently and make adjustments. That doesn't mean he's a great coach, but it means he's open to it, and it means it's just beyond asinine and ridiculous to have these conversations over should they move on. After 8 freaking games. So for Adrian Griffin to do all this, I have been very encouraged by what we have seen from him this early into his career, in his adaptiveness, in his willingness to listen to the players and not to allow them to make decisions, but to give them that voice. And again, his big line there, as a coach, you listen to your players. If it makes sense, we'll implement what it is that they're asking for. That's what Adrian Griffin has given you. He's going to continue to develop in his role and get better. You can't undersell how different it is to go from the back of the bench to the front of the bench, and even from there to go from the right-hand man or the lead or one of the lead assistants who's just working on scouting and matchups, and maybe you're that guy that players, when they don't get their way, go to and try to bend their ear and say, hey, can you help me out with this? And to be that sounding board, to go from that to all of a sudden be the guy that's wearing the whistle, that's calling the timeouts, and that's, you know, he's talked about it quite a bit already this season. It's just so different that when I was assistant, my day was packed, but it was easier because it was tunnel vision where you're focused on I'm doing the scout for this opponent and we installed, you know, this particular action or we wanted to install this defensively. That's what I was focused on. That's what I was dealing with. Now it's everything. It's no different from any of us learning a new job. It's going to take time. It has been far, far from a disaster for Adrian Griffin. So again, let's give it some time and let's not get into the unfair and ridiculous discourse that took place earlier this week. Night two of a back-to-back tomorrow. Who can we expect to see? And again, what this defense has looked like the last eight games. We'll get into that as we wrap up the show after this on Bucks Talk. Bucks are 8-4 on the season. They're 2-0 in the in-season tournament. They are 6-2 since we saw the defense not fully revert to what they did the last 5 years, but a lot more of those elements. 6-2 during that stretch with the 8th best offense, the 8th best defense, and the 8th best net rating. It's not finished. It's still a process. But we're starting to see some of those successes, and we're starting to see a lot of movement into the right direction for this group. You hope that continues tomorrow. Keep an eye on the injury report. The first one we'll get a glimpse at potentially is going to be at 11:30, 10:30 in the morning tomorrow, though the Bucks have a little more time to submit their injury report, their initial one, given that they played today. But keep an eye on it to see what the status is of Giannis. We've seen him listed on the injury reports already a handful of times this week. He was upgraded from questionable to probable today and, of course, played. Marjan, I wouldn't expect him to play, but it'll be interesting to see what he's listed at on the injury report. And Chris Middleton, we did not get a clear answer over his status and if this was going to be a point where he could play in back-to-back games. I would doubt it, but we'll keep an eye on that one as well as the Bucks welcome the Dallas Mavericks to town tomorrow at Fiserv Forum. So again, 7 o'clock tip tomorrow, 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins, and our postgame Bucks talk immediately after the game wraps up. Next week, by the way, big week. It's a holiday week. It's already Thanksgiving. You got four more games, too, and they are some interesting ones. Two games against the Washington Wizards, not to confuse you. Only one is a part of the in-season tournament. Damian Lillard faces his former team in the Portland Trail Blazers for the first time 1 week from Sunday. And then the big one, Wednesday, November 22nd, the Bucks go to Boston for their first matchup with the Celtics. So we got a huge week next week on this show. Again, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock tip at Fiserv Forum for the Bucks and the Dallas Mavericks, and Bucks talk immediately after the game. My thanks to everybody for tuning in tonight, to Matt Sossler for producing the program. We'll talk to you all tomorrow night with more Bucks Talk.